Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Beyond Pain podcast with myself, Joe Lavaca, and Joe Gambino. In today's episode, we continue our conversation around training versus exercise. So Joe and I pick up right where we left off at the end of the previous episode. We expand on a few ideas or barriers to the ACSM guidelines, and that takes us into some ideas around exposure versus performance when it comes to this idea of training versus exercise. We hope you enjoy the continuation and conclusion of our conversation, as well as all episodes and conversations in the future of the Beyond Pain podcast. And if you do, please remember to like, subscribe, share, all those wonderful things that you could do on social media to help the podcast grow and get our message out there. So without further ado, I bring you the conclusion of our conversation around training and exercise.
Welcome to the Beyond Pain podcast with your host, Joe Gambino and Joe Lavaca. Join the two Joes, two physical therapists, as they discuss how to navigate the uncertainties of pain so you can move beyond it and get back to the activities you love most. This podcast is for Joe, and their guests to share their clinical thoughts and ideas based on their collective clinical experiences. Can this information be for you? Maybe, but we cannot know for sure. Therefore, it is always worth talking to your healthcare provider to make the best decisions in your care before you implement anything on this podcast. And please use common sense.
So is that something when you're talking to your clients, talking to other clinicians even, or taught in the past, have you seen this like barrier with the ACSM guidelines or lack of knowledge? Because it's been out there for so long.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, they're out there. I think I saw some statistic while I was reading kind of like one of their like little, their texts from like 20, I don't remember what year it was, but it had like all like the 2008 to 2016 statistics. And for adults at the highest point of like, I think it was close to 2016, was 26% of Americans hit the recommendations that they have, which is not a lot of people. And it kind of makes sense because I know a whole lot of people who don't do anything, like my dad, stepmom, my mom, they don't do any activity. Like, you know, my dad has a very active job. He might fit within some of these things, or he did have a very active job. His job's not as active anymore, but I know he does a lot of walking now. So, I mean, he gets some stuff, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how many people actually know these things, outside of people who've done like basic personal training certificates, because this information is always in there, like the ACSM guidelines. But honestly, I don't know if I'm talking to people, I never really look at this stuff, right? Because it's just, what can the person do? And what can they put into their lives as that is going to be meaningful for them? And you can reach your goals with less than probably what you think. And, you know, do you need to do, I mean, the moderate, honestly, like I looked at some of the examples for moderate activity, and
well, yeah,
it's like,
because I think they're,
yeah, they were just kind of like, I was just reading and I was just confused because it was like, carry heavy groceries up the stairs, and then doubles tennis was right next to it. I'm like, and then it like jogging was in there. I'm like, okay. I mean, like, who are you putting into these studies to like review how much calorie, like energy expenditure is coming out to get these numbers, right? Like, because how is like doubles tennis and just like carrying groceries up the stairs equivalent, right? Like, how hard are these people playing tennis that there's, that's like equivalent to some of these things, right? So I don't know, like I almost like ignore these things. And for me, really what kind of matters most is, what can that person do? Because something's always better than nothing. And I have this conversation with potential clients, with my current clients, all the time, where time becomes the barrier. And it's like, oh, I have like, I don't know why an hour in the gym is like the number. I think it's kind of there because like, if you spend much more time over there, depending on how hard you work, like increased cortisol, right? It's not as anabolic. And I think that's the kind of reason why that 1 hour mark was kind of put there in the beginning. But like, for people, it's like, it's an hour or it's nothing, right? Like, and I have to do it 5 times a week or it's nothing. I'm like, well, why is it nothing? Like, why can't we just do 3 times a week for an hour and then maybe do some other movement if you have some time on the weekends or off days to get a little bit more in. And I think that's once you start to kind of highlight that and say, hey, let's look at your calendar. What's kind of going on? Where do you, like, what is realistic? I always ask this question with every new person I work with is, how many days a week do you want to work out, right? How much time do you have for mobility, corrective work, whatever we need to do to make you feel better? And how much time do you have for strength training or whatever it is kind of training that we're putting in there? And then they give me the answers. And then I say, well, what's realistic to you? And then they give me a different answer. Well, let's start realistic answer first. Because all that's going to happen if we start with the other answer you gave me is that you're not going to be 100% compliant. In our first month of training with each other, you're going to be disappointed that you're missing sessions, that we're going to have this whole snowball effect of things that are not going positive. If we start easy, what's going to happen is you're going to hit 100% of your sessions. You're going to feel really good. You're going to feel more motivated. And if you feel like you're developing the habit and have more capacity, super easy to add a day. It's so much harder to work backwards. You know, this probably happens with the New Year's resolution crowd. Like it's, I'm going to go to the gym 7 days a week. And then you go to the gym that first couple of weeks for 3 times a week. And then you just stop because you're not happy, because you're not reaching the goals you set out, which were so lofty because you weren't doing anything prior, right? Like holiday season's here, you get out of the habit of even doing exercise. And then all of a sudden you think, hey, I'm motivated now. I can hit the gym 7 days a week for 5 hours a day and work out this way. And I'm going to lose all this weight or gain all this muscle, whatever. So I think it's just being realistic, having flexibility. I even tell my clients, you don't need to even do 100%. I'm not going to bother you. You know, I'll maybe check in on you and make sure everything's good. But as long as you're doing like 85, 80% of the work, I haven't seen anybody not constantly move towards their goals over the course of months, a year, so on and so forth. It's when you're really falling off, missing sessions, things like that, where it becomes a hurdle.
Yeah, I like the way you framed it with people, like almost kind of like starting out big. Right? Like I always tell people or start off with questions of like, you know, what do you want from our time together? Right. And people will say all sorts of different things. You know, it's strength. I want to live pain free. I want this. I want that. I'm like, okay. Like, you know, adding things to your schedule, right, is going to result in us sacrificing other things. Right. So what are you willing to put into the process each week or each day to achieve what you want? Right. And then, like, to your point, oh, well, you know, I could probably or be willing to do 10, 15, max 30 minutes a day, or I'd really only be able to or willing to maybe do twice a day or twice a week, sorry. And then I'll kind of refocus the conversation and say, okay, well, then based on that, you know, here's the realistic implications for your goals. It's going to take us a lot longer with 10 minutes or 20 minutes a day as opposed to 30 or 45 minutes a day, but that's okay. I just want to make sure that you are aware that the process is what we're after, right? And if we implement the process correctly, that's achievable for you, then the results will come in 2 months or 3 months or 6 months or 8 months or whatever the case is. We just have to hold on to something tangible that makes us realize we're moving in the right direction. Because like you, the saying I have people repeat, right, among others in our, you know, first few interactions is we can always add. It is much harder to subtract, right? And just the same way, you know, using TrueCoach as an app-based program that I like to put people on, you know, TrueCoach is not afraid of emailing you every day saying, hey, you missed a workout. Hey, where were you? Hey, this, hey, that. And that could be sort of like motivating for people, like, oh yeah, you know, thanks for that little nudge, TrueCoach. Or it could be like, oh man, my inbox is really filling up. I had 5 missed workout emails last week. Man, that really sucks. That's a downer. So I think like that idea of what you want, what are you willing, and then, you know, what's realistic. I kind of like that process and approach.
No, I love that. And I've got that a whole lot. When there's a lot of like not doing and not doing and not doing it can definitely snowball people. And that's why, like, again, right, like it setting these realistic expectations and like when I had Olivia, I didn't work out for a few months probably, and then I just started with 2 days a week, 15 minutes, just kettlebell circuit. And then that allowed me to snowball into 3 days a week, 4 days a week, 30 minute sessions, and now it's to a point where I can do, you know, anywhere between 3 and 5 sessions for a full hour, no problems. Just depends on how busy I am, my traveling, stuff like that. And it's just much better. So start easy because it's so much easier to add than to subtract. And that's probably the biggest takeaway of this episode, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one other thing that's probably worth touching on at least for a little bit, is again with this idea of pain, right? I mean, and that's how people are really going to find me and you, at least in the beginning. And I think programming for pain and programming for performance or strength are two very different things. And I think, you know, Ben Cormack and Craig Levinson have really shaped a lot of my views on trying to balance the two. And, you know, taking from Ben's approach of, well, when we're programming for pain, you know, we have to think about graded exposure, right? And these light, repeated stimuli over and over again. And then eventually, as pain diminishes or things just become more tolerable, you know, then that's where we can maybe, you know, amp up some resistance. We can amp up some isometric. We can amp up frequency. You know, we can make it, you know, more difficult in terms of position or things like that. And how I love kind of pairing that with what Craig talks about is, you know, really kind of finding the hardest thing that you do well. Right? So, all right, if squatting is too painful, what else can you do? Right? What, how else can we train your legs? Like, and even you brought up your deadlifting before. Well, even if you're deadlifting where your back was still giving you problems with a hinge, well, all right, there's still so many ways that we can help you load your hips and move around and think about like building up your heart rate, building up some effort, and then giving you those wins. Because I think a big part of, you know, people kind of stuck in pain, and why I do like the ACSM guidelines and why I do try to pay attention to them, or at least like push them onto people, into people's awareness, is a lot of times when people tell me about, you know, why they're stuck and, you know, the things they're not doing, sometimes you can play the game of like, well, what's your doppelganger doing, right? Someone who looks just like you, same age, same activity level, maybe has a family, they don't have pain. What's different about their life? You know, because we all know somebody like that. You said it before. Like, hey, you know, I know a lot of people who do work out, they don't have pain. A lot of people who don't work out, they don't have pain. So what's the difference? You know, oh, well, you know, so-and-so is a member of a bowling team, and so-and-so is this, and, you know, or they used to work out their whole life. Okay, cool. So do they have all these extra little things? Do you have those things, right? And then what can we control in your world to help make you stronger? Because I think, you know, maybe this is, you know, a little bit of a tangent too, but I think, you know, when we say strength and I want to get healthier, these are all things like you and I typically just nod our heads to. You know, a lot of healthcare providers like, oh yeah, sure, okay, strong, okay, yeah, oh, healthier. Well, what does that actually mean? And working with so many people with pain, you know, what I kind of tell them is, hey, look, you know, the way that I look at strength training is anything that's going to make you or your system more capable of handling stress, period, done. We can do that with meditation. We can do that with breath work. We can do that with walking. We can do that with weights. We can do that with stretching. It doesn't matter. But what matters, or at least what I tell them in the beginning, like you said, can we be successful 80, 85% of the time? It doesn't even need to be 100%. So what on this whole long list of options? Have you tried? Are you willing to try? Can you try? And that, I think, has made my conversation with people in pain a lot easier. So I know you mentioned before, like ACSM is not something you typically pay attention to or maybe like, you know, bring up. So then what would your kind of philosophy be or fall back on, Joe, when you're thinking about a system or, you know, defining strength of people? Is that something that you ever consider also?
It's hard because it all kind of comes back to the person's goals, because I mean, like in the strength world, right, at the college and, you know, professional, whatever, there are like strength metrics in a sense, like how much can you bench, how much can you deadlift. Dan John's really good at like having like how much can you farmers carry and like a lot of different things, right? How much can you kettlebell swing, stuff like that. And sure, we can have these measures of like, hey, if you're doing this, you're going to be in a good place from a strength perspective overall. But what if somebody doesn't care? You know, all they want to do is like keep up with their kids and be able to play with them and get up and down from the ground, right? Like, they need to get to some of those levels, right? So it's all person specific. They just need to do, in my eyes, enough, right? And you can think of it, I like to always think about like, what's the minimal effective dose to get the maximum benefit, right? We don't need to do more than that because you're not going to get much more benefit. But if you do less than that, you're not going to get any benefits at all or not enough. So what is that line that we need to kind of tiptoe? that's going to improve your quality of life, that's going to allow you to reach your goals, what's going to move you the needle in the forward direction for you month over month over month over month, without, you know, feeling like you're taking a bunch of steps back, without feeling like you're plateauing, things like that. So if I was going to be looking at, like, you know, that, right, like, it's always, you said it before, right, like, you with strength, how can you tolerate more stress? I look at it as, how can we give your body what it needs to tolerate the demands you want to put on it? And that's the minimum, right? Then from there, right, we can, you know, you can work on things that's going to, hey, well, we work to reduce your resting heart rate, you know, all the benefits that cardiovascular training does. You don't need a lot for that stuff. I think the old guidelines, or I don't remember what I was reading, but they're just walking. I don't remember the time or the distance or what it was, but if you walk consistently for some of these, you know, like 30, like it was like 30 minutes a day for X amount of days per week, like there was a huge change and shift in mortality rates when we look down in the future. So you don't really need it to be crazy. I would suggest, like, I mean, just be active and, you know, get out of your house and go for walks and exercise and get your heart rate up in any way, shape or form. I mean, I now know from, you know, owning this house that gardening is a lot of work. If you enjoy gardening, go get out there a couple of times a week and pluck some weeds. And I got Bermuda grass, which is the worst thing in the world that creeps up into all my mulch beds, and pulling that stuff is quite work. So go ahead and do that stuff, because I know a lot of people enjoy gardening, right? And you can get out there, and it is not easy work. It would probably fall actually in the moderate to moderate intensity type of activities. If you're in New York and you have these heavy snows and you have to shovel, that would probably fit into some of that vigorous activity work that you need to do. I would skip the gym that day if I had to, you know, shovel out my garage. I'm not going to the gym that day. I'm chilling. A lot of people do. I'm tired. I'm ready for a nap. You know, I'll be taking a protein shake and passing out on my couch afterwards, right? So, you know, you said before, right, with like all this like time, and like we just need to think of things like, and nothing ever needs to be perfect. It doesn't have to look at the weight, like it doesn't need to look exactly how it looks in your head, because it's probably too much or outlandish, or, you know, not necessarily what you even need to have progress. And we need to have flexible minds when it comes to programming, how frequent we're in the gym, what happens when we do mess up, right? We skip some time, and or it's harder because we have other obligations. There's a lot of things that we can go back here, but I do want to shift, you know, because we can talk about the fitness component forever and ever. And I want to go back to the pain stuff. I'm going to kind of keep the conversation going in that way, because it is different, right? Sure. When someone's in pain, training and exercise it's reframed, right? There's nothing different between rehab in my eyes, and I would imagine from hearing you and knowing you, that it's the same in your eyes, but there's nothing different between performance training and rehab, right? It's the spectrum of where you are. And what I tell people I work with is that you need, you know, like we're going to find the things that you can do now that don't cause any pain. And that's your training. That's the things that's going to get you stronger and help you reach your fitness goals. That's the stuff. But we need to take the things that you suck at, you know, if you have pain with this or pain with that, deadlift, squat, whatever it is, we need to take a step back now and say, hey, this stuff now is the rehab. It's not your fitness training anymore, right? We need to find your entry point. We need to figure out what's going to kind of stress that tissue enough where it's going to continue to progress. And then as that progresses, we're going to get to a certain point where it becomes fitness again. But you have to have that mental shift. Because if you go into that session, you start feeling good and you're like, let me push it. And then all of a sudden we bump it too hard and you have a flare up. I treat that as a good sign because you're pushing your body, but it's, you know, clear, right? Like this is still in the rehab world and we need to build it up a little bit more. And I personally use, I don't remember what research study I got these pain guidelines from, but I use pain guidelines and I've shifted them into a system called rating a perceived symptom. I don't remember where I got that from either. But pretty much it uses those pain guidelines and gives people an understanding that if you feel this after something, this is what it means. If your pain goes above a 4 or lasts for more than 2 days, it's too much of a stimulus. More often than not, if you continue at that clip, you're probably going to piss things off before you make them better. If it's under a 4, where 1, 2, 3 goes away within 24 hours, I like that kind of stimulus for people. It means that, you know, sure, you're going to feel some discomfort afterwards. It's not going to be too much. You need to rest, recover, let it come back to baseline. You can get back into your training at that exact same volume, at that exact same intensity. You are not going to progress until you can do that session with none of that pain afterwards. That's your sign to make a 10, 15% bump and see how that feels. And if there's nothing, no pain, no soreness, no nothing, you have free reign to bump it up, do whatever. So if someone's like working with me and like, oh, can I still do this? Try it. Go for it. If it's painful, we'll make a decision. If it's not painful, keep doing it. There's no rule on it because you have pain here. If there's no pain when you perform the activity, right? So that's what I've been utilizing. And I think it kind of falls into that that mindset that you were talking about from a pain perspective that you've kind of been gathering from Levinson and who was the other person you mentioned? I can't even remember.
Ben Cormack. Ben Cormack.
Right. I love Ben.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to sort of like wrap things up, because my sentiments around pain are pretty similar, and we can always probably dive into a little bit more nuances in a future episode, and I'm sure we will. But yeah, all those things you mentioned are completely acceptable. I think they're expected, and I think that's what, you know, communicating that ahead of time is always really important. Like, hey, look, I don't think this is going to be pain free for you. Yeah. So what is going to be accepted and accepted, right? Throughout the course of rehab, I think is really going to help guide people with a lot of the things that we mentioned before.
Before we close it up, I'm curious though, on that note, when you have people and they're getting back into strength, is there a model that you use for them?
Getting them back to strength, meaning,
you're working with like a local CrossFit athlete or somebody, right? Like, how are you navigating the return to activity or them continuing training alongside the stuff that you're working on?
Oh, alongside of it, like mixing the rehab with their training currently. Well, if they have a program in place or they're working with a trainer, the only thing I really tell them that needs to change are, you know, maybe things that you mentioned before that are, you know, exceeding tolerable pain levels, or maybe kind of flaring them up over, you know, the course of maybe 12 or 24 hours after they do things, right? But then in that regard, I'm going to have them just look at their program, not from like a muscle standpoint, but from just like a pattern standpoint. Like, hey, right now we know we're having trouble with horizontal pressing, right? Which for people listening, that might just be like bench pressing. Or we're having, you know, trouble with a bilateral knee dominant exercise. For people listening, that might be like a squat, right? So then all the things that in your program can still stay. Like, I still want all your powers. I still want all this. I still want all that. Just every time we come up to a horizontal press or a bilateral knee dominant exercise, let's just make this one quick lateralization, right? Maybe let me make it a single. Maybe we change tempo. I found that to be really helpful with people. So I try to make as little adjustments to their current programming as possible, unless it's an acute injury in which I might, you know, encourage them to, maybe we do a deload for a week or two, you know, off of that specific movement. Maybe it's things like just light ideas, light isometrics, right, to kind of guide tissue into healing, settle everything down, and then we can just kind of gradually build things back up. But if they have a program, I try to not touch it, right? I want them to keep going because chances are they already made some of those modifications and often too many modifications around pain with their trainer and their current things. So I love just thinking about things in patterns, right? And then just kind of substituting, well, what would you be successful with in this pattern? Or just really simply changing tempo, changing just reps or sets, turning down frequency. Or, hey, maybe it's just we need to go lighter, right? You can still do all the motions, but it seems like your sensitivity is triggered by weight and progressive weight. So there's something about the intensity of this motion. This has nothing to do with your joint or your muscles or this or that, but we just have to condition this now to either accept more volume, accept more intensity, or maybe temporarily lateralize or regress. But that's sort of how I'll approach it. I do want them to continue their sport as much as they can. If they are not able to, I'm going to encourage them to keep going to CrossFit class, you know, cheer on the sidelines, you know, work on the bike, work on the rower. If they're part of a team, I'm going to tell them to go show up at the games, right? You know, take their shirts off, paint, you know, their team colors on their chest or on their face, you know, but just stay a part of that whole lifestyle for just as you normally would while you're kind of working on bettering these other issues.
I love that. I think that's a great way to kind of close this episode out. And I think there's a lot of kind of takeaways here as far as working through pain and kind of just looking at fitness as a whole and navigating some of the hurdles that people might have, just kind of like sticking with the fitness routine. So I'm excited. I mean, this episode, I think, is going to be a double episode, just with the length of time here. So it might be 3 and 4. But next episode, we're going to be talking about you, Joe. We're going to be getting into your stories of pain. We're going to be kind of, we're going to get a little bit of your journey, how you navigate those things, how has it affected your training, stuff like that. So I think that's going to be fun to kind of highlight you, Joey boy.
I look forward to being highlighted. I think Courtney would probably vouch for that as well.
If you were a highlighter, Joe, what color would you be?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I'll just roll with the classic yellow. Although I don't know. I guess maybe let me change my answer. I'd be green. I don't know why. I do green just sort of like captures my attention just a little bit more. So that's what I use on all my little articles here on my desktop when I'm highlighting them and stuff. Turn the color to green every time. I don't know why I stuck with green. What would you be?
The first thing that came to my mind was green as well, but I think from personal usage of highlighters, I think I would go with the hot pink.
Personal, like usage of highlighters. I don't know if I've ever heard that.
That's what I use in college. You know, I use the hot pink highlighter more often than not.
I love it. All right. Well, until next time, my friend.
All right. Well, Joey boy, I love you. Anyone who stuck to the end of both of these episodes, because I don't know if we close out the first one, love you guys as well.
Take care, everyone.